Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
Well, the month between Thanksgiving and Christmas is, unsurprisingly, the busiest time of year for internet retailers. Most of these purchases will arrive at consumers' doors in boxes, making much of their trip from warehouses and distribution centers via truck or van. UPS, in fact, says that its drivers delivered 700 million packages during the 2017 holiday season.
Wowza.
Not all to Park City, but quite a few. In a piece titled Holiday Shoppers, The Planet Needs You to Take It Easy with Overnight Shipping, journalist Jeff Turrentine writes that the ability to press a button, wait a day, and then have somebody at your door hand you the thing you wanted makes it easy to ignore the fact that all those trucks and vans bringing those packages emit a lot of carbon dioxide and other pollutants into the atmosphere. So does this convenience factor cause us to consume more fossil fuels than if we were to drive to a store and buy that item ourselves? Well,
that's a good question.
That's good. Well, hopefully Jeff Turrentine will provide some light on that. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning on This Green
Earth.
It's
a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Hey, so let's start. I mean, obviously, the idea of ordering things and receiving them, having them shipped to it, that's been around for practically 100 years, right? It starts with the Sears catalog, right?
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah. And actually, up until relatively recently, that model wasn't necessarily an environmentally unfriendly one. If you could keep people from having to make lots and lots of trips to stores, if they could order things and either have them all delivered at once or maybe have items delivered to a central location like a store and you could go pick it up there, it worked just fine. The truth is that online shipping actually has a smaller carbon footprint than traditional shopping at a brick-and-mortar store until expedited shipping enters the picture, until we start opting for things like two-day delivery or same-day delivery. Up until that point, online shipping can be greener. It can be greener when companies are able to consolidate their shipments, like I said, in the most efficient way, minimize the actual mileage for their delivery vehicles, use cleaner and more efficient vehicles, all of these things. And you have to remember that retailers and companies want to be efficient. They really want to minimize those costs. They don't want to have to hire extra drivers. They don't want to have to buy new trucks. They certainly don't want to have to buy extra gasoline by making, extra stops. So it doesn't have to be that way, but expedited shipping has certainly changed the equation.
So if I order a, or if I want a brand new fly fishing rod, and I could go down into Salt Lake City and get the rod that I want, or I could order it online, you're saying that it's less environmental impact if I order that online, only if I accept, three to five day delivery?
Well, here's the thing. If you were to go down to your, bait and tackle shop or your sporting goods store and look at rods, all the rods that are in that store have been sent from the rod manufacturer at the same time on the same truck. They have a system in place for getting rods to those stores. And what's happened is that expedited shipping has disrupted these efficient models. So now not you necessarily individually, but someone might say, I really want a new fly rod. And they would look online, browse for it, and then they would order it. And it would come to, and they would choose, because of course it makes perfect sense to choose the expedited shipping option when it's free or super cheap. Maybe it's $2.99 or $3.99. You think, yeah, I want that. Of course I want it fast. It comes to your house or your apartment, and you look at it, and maybe it's not quite right. Maybe it's not the right color. Maybe the grip is wrong, or it just doesn't feel right. And so you decide, well, you're going to send it back, because a lot of these places also say free returns, and then you get another one. We're now using delivery vehicles in a way that they were never, ever intended to be used, which is a way of browsing and sending things back. We're trying on clothes, we're trying out goods, and then these trucks are having to go back and forth and back and forth to get us things as quickly as they can. The other problem that you don't encounter when you're just going down to your sporting goods store to get a fishing rod is that if you opted for that two-day delivery, or in some cases even same-day delivery, the truck that is going to bring it out to you has got to get it to you by a certain deadline. It used to be that they would fill up the truck with fishing rods and send them all to the store, and it would be packed full.
Right.
And you could minimize the number of trips that a driver had to make. But if you really have requested, or even demanded, I should say, that fishing rod, and it needs to be at your house tomorrow,
right,
the dispatchers, the drivers, everybody is going to say, well, you know what? We have to send the truck out halfway full. We just have to get this rod to so-and-so. We're going to have to just wait and fill up another truck, and hopefully we'll fill that one up completely. But you end up with this series of trucks, a sequence of trucks that are maybe halfway full,
right,
or a third of the way full, that are now being sent all over the place instead of just to a single location like a sporting goods store. Obviously, it's a recipe for inefficiency.
So do we have any idea, like, just how big of an impact this is? This seems like a really difficult thing to measure,
quantify,
of course, and quantify.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's been a little bit of research on this front.
Yeah, there has. There is a wonderful video that, and of course I can't give you the URL address off the top of my head, but if you look up Miguel Haller, J-A-L-L-E-R. He is a professor of logistics and transportation at UC Davis in California.
Yeah.
And he takes part in a video. So Miguel Haller, look up delivery or holiday shipping. And it's just a wonderful three-minute primer on some of the carbon costs that we're attaching to this. I actually don't have, believe it or not, the numbers right in front of me. I think that they're still kind of being... they're still coming in because the numbers change every year. But there is definitely an impact that we're paying. We're paying a price in terms of the exhaust and the emissions that are coming from all these extra trucks. And that's, I think, one of the more insidious aspects of this, is that when we see it on our computer screen, it says free shipping, free two-day shipping. And we think to ourselves, oh, well, there's really no cost. But we're not accounting for the externalized costs that come in the form of all of these extra trips and extra miles that have to be driven.
So what can companies do, or what are some companies doing to try to minimize the costs and the use of fuel and the number of trips and those kinds of things?
Well, there are some interesting solutions that are kind of coming around the pike. For starters, a lot of these retailers and delivery companies are beginning to understand that they need to electrify their fleets. IKEA and UPS are already taking steps to electrify their fleets, and I think that they're going to try to have complete electric fleets in the near future. There's also interesting technology that is happening now. There's something sort of like a Wi-Fi communication system that trucks are using with each other, and they're letting delivery trucks are letting each other know what the traffic patterns are in particular cities, so that they can avoid red lights and they don't have to idle at stoplights. And it's sort of like, you know, how convoy truckers used to use CBs to let let other truckers know when the police were up ahead.
Sure.
Now, instead of like warning the driver behind you that there's a smoky, you know, waiting in a speed trap, they're saying there's a big traffic jam on the highway, or there's a bunch of red lights that you might want to avoid. And that helps. There's also something called truck pooling, and truck pooling is really interesting. That's where trucks actually make it so that they're just a certain amount of space apart from one another on the highway, and it actually cuts the wind shear, and it makes them more aerodynamic. So there are technologies that are being used, but the biggest thing that the companies and the retailers can do is to move over to an electric fleet. Now, that's half of the equation, but the other half is us. And I think that probably the most important factor in the equation is that consumers need to ask themselves the question, do I really need this product in 2 days or 3 days? Is it something that I can wait for? If you plan ahead, these shippers and these companies can consolidate their orders so that the scarf or the phone case or the TV that you want can be put on a truck with other items that are going to the same location, and they can fill up that truck and make it a more efficient trip. So if we can plan ahead, consolidate our orders so that we get everything we need in fewer shipments, and we avoid expedited shipping, even if it's free, if we don't really need it. And also, there's just, you know, maybe buying less stuff. Maybe think about giving your loved one an experience instead of a good for the holidays. That helps a lot.
Right. And and if I can get comfortable with not returning things.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. We have to stop, like I said, using delivery vehicles as a way of trying out things.
Yeah.
If you can make sure that the item you're ordering really is probably the correct size, the right color, and not just order it, send it back, order it, and send it back. We're all guilty of it. I've even done it.
Sure.
But I'm going to definitely try to be doing it less. And that kind of leads to another point, too, which is nobody needs to feel ashamed for using two-day shipping if it's really needed. It's just the question we ought to be asking ourselves is it really needed? If it's something that really needs to be there because it's a birthday or a Christmas gift that needs to be under the tree, well, sure. But if it's something that you don't have to have in 2 days, you really can make a big difference by opting for like regular 5-day shipping or 7-day shipping.
Well, I think that's a really good point because so much of what we order now is not for a special occasion. It's just like an everyday household need. You know, Amazon almost and other companies, but right, largely Amazon fills this role of like the almost a daily trip to the store. And so many times we can wait for some of those things we order.
It's really true.
Right.
In the video that I mentioned earlier, the host of the video talks about how you can order a pair of socks online and ask for expedited shipping, which might be free or $2.99, and they come in a single package. That had to, you know, go in a truck and go from a distribution center or a warehouse to your house. And what's really interesting to me is that for the retailers, some of them are operating at a loss when they do this. It may actually cost them more money to ship it to you in 2 days than the item itself costs. They manage to still make a profit because of the immense volume when we're talking about big retailers like Amazon or Walmart.
Mm.
But the individual item itself may cost less than the transportation cost to get it to you. And once you start kind of thinking along those lines, you realize that you do play a small but important part in the equation. And all you have to do is just kind of ask yourself what your priorities are, and you can make a difference.
And I see more and more commercials that kind of promote this idea of living an online life, that everything from my contact lenses to teeth straightening devices, you know, to my food. I get prepared meals sent to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I live in New York City, and all of the ads on the subway these days are for the kinds of services you're describing, especially the prepared meals. There's a toothbrush company now that's
yes.
doing a big advertising
that's
list
right.
on the New York subway that'll send you an electric toothbrush once a month, I guess, or a new toothbrush head. There's just nothing now that can't be sent to you at your home or your apartment.
We're speaking with Jeff Turrentine. He's a journalist with, among other things, the National Resources Defense Council blog On Earth. We're talking about the environmental impacts of online shipping and, most importantly, overnight delivery, 1 to 2 day delivery. So kind of to wrap it up, Jeff, again, online shopping and shipping is fine and actually has a smaller carbon footprint as quantified by some researchers than driving down to my brick and mortar stores. As long as I'm comfortable with 3 to 5 day delivery and I'm not returning a lot of items that I get that I don't like. So there's a break even.
There are, of course, caveats and exceptions,
yeah.
but that's a basic good general rule to apply. If you just think a little bit more, I mean, you know, part of the problem, too, is I think you described in the intro that there's a kind of magical quality to sitting at your kitchen table or sitting
yes.
in your living room, browsing an item, pressing a button, and then lo and behold, 2 days later, somebody brings it to you. If you can just slow things down and maybe ask yourself if you really need the item, first of all, and if you do really need it, if you really need it quickly, that quickly, then we can help these retailers and delivery companies slow down their operations. Because that's the best thing that we can do, is not make them rush to get you everything. When that rush takes place, it pretty much destroys the efficiency programs and policies that they have in place, and they have to disrupt those normal efficiencies just to get you the thing that you want. If you really do need it, absolutely use it. If you don't, really don't.
If I can go a few days without that electric toothbrush,
right.
I'm, you know, the planet.
Come on, Chris, you got to give him a break.
Like you say, the planet thanks us.
That's right.
If we can be a little more patient, learn patience, and change our behaviors. Hey, Jeff, we got a few more minutes. I wanted to touch on another piece you wrote following the elections really interesting one about a number of Democratic governors that were elected who actually replaced Republican governors, in particular in five states, and the fact that these newly elected Democratic governors are big proponents of clean energy and renewable energy. Can you?
Yeah, it's a really interesting phenomenon, and a lot of it is taking place out in your part of the country, out west. When President Trump announced that he was going to be pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, I think a lot of state legislatures and governors realized that it was going to be up to the states to pick up the slack. And what was really interesting was that lawmakers in three Western states, Nevada, New Mexico, that Maine also joined them, but they're not out west. They actually passed these clean energy bills, and they sent them to their respective governors for signing. But the Republican governors of these states vetoed the bills, and the legislation went nowhere. What happened was that people who were running for governor in these states, Democrats actually, campaigned on really supporting clean energy and turning their states around and having them become clean energy economies. And they won. They won in these states, and the old governors were either swept out of office, or the party was swept out of office. Mm-hmm. And in their stead, we have a trio of new leaders in Nevada, New Mexico, and Maine, all of whom have either pledged not to support renewable energy or pledged to support renewable energy, but they want to supercharge it. They really want to try to get to, some of them even, you know, say they want to get to 100% renewable energy by 2030.
Yeah, and picking up on that theme, too, a lot of cities and counties around the country are also establishing robust clean energy goals. Park City, Summit County here has very aggressive goals to get to clean energy, 100% clean energy by certain dates.
Yeah. So and you know, it's kind of interesting too, because even Republican governors in red states can no longer deny that the future is going to be a renewable energy future. So you have in your state, you know, I believe you're something like second or third, I think, for geothermal energy, and you guys are, I believe, second in the United States for solar capacity per capita or something like that.
Yes.
Kansas, Nebraska, all of these states that are you know, historically and culturally conservative understand that you know, coal and oil and even to some extent natural gas are finite resources. Getting them out of the ground is dirty and dangerous. And they also really recognize the fact that there are just so many jobs to be had in the new renewable energy economy. So the governors of these states and even some of the Republican legislators in these states aren't disparaging wind or solar. They are working maybe a little more quietly than their Democratic counterparts, but they're working to make sure that the mechanisms are put in place so that when the time comes to make the transition to renewable energy, that their states are ready.
It's encouraging. We'll have to wait
it is.
We love that kind of news.
Yeah, we'll have to wait till 2019, but that's only a few weeks away, these governors.
Right.
And so that's what the encouraging part is. So, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Jeff Turrentine, again, a journalist, the culture and politics columnist at NRDC's On Earth. He's also a frequent contributor to Slate, The Washington Post, The New York Times Book Review, et cetera. Jeff, do you have a website?
I don't have a personal website, but if people want to read more of this kind of stuff, please come to onearth.org, onearth.org, and that is published by our parent organization, the Natural Resources Defense Council, which can be found at nrdc.org.
Perfect. Jeff, thanks again for taking the time to join Nell and me on This Green Earth.